Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to the Visual Studio Connect event. I'm here, Corey Fowler, with some great people from the ASP.NET team. And we're going to be talking to you today, kind of a continuation of the conversation from yesterday. Just so you kind of understand what was talked about yesterday, if you haven't been able to catch up in the news, we talked about a number of different things in regards to the momentum of developer tools, the cloud. One of the biggest things I'd have to say is open sourcing .NET Core, which is actually pretty interesting.
Big news.
Huge.
Really big news.
Yeah.
I've heard it actually like out mentioned Kim Kardashian yesterday, which, I mean, that's a pretty big thing.
I got nothing to say about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also support for Linux and OS X. So you can see we have two Macs on screen today. We're going to be running through a couple of different demos. Excellent. And that was all kind of a part of Scott Guthrie's conversation. One last piece of that is Visual Studio Community Edition. So this allows, you know, any developer out there that is non-enterprise to go download and leverage Visual Studio to develop their applications. As part of Soma's talk, we had a conversation around ASP.NET working in Linux, in a Docker container, on Azure, and Visual Studio actually going and debugging that, which was really, really
crazy.
That was insane.
That was fantastic.
Lots of great things there. Really wanted to focus on Visual Studio 2015, which we announced yesterday as well. The preview of that, which is going to be like the great thing for mobile development, cloud development, and a great tool to kind of provide a rich ecosystem for DevOps services. Further on in the day, Scott Hanselman came on, and we talked about the modern and open web. So this is some of the stuff that we're going to be covering here today. Things around Grunt, Gulp, Bower, NPM, new task runner within Visual Studio, which is really cool. Omnisharp.net, which I know you worked on.
Yeah, right. Saying. That is where it's at, right there. You know, after Visual Studio, of course.
After Visual Studio. Yeah. So if you are developing on a Mac and using tools like Sublime, things like that, there are some great functionality for .NET developers there. And we covered out some of the new website features in regards to deployment slots, testing, production, web jobs. So lots of great things to talk about.
It's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff to talk
about. Yeah. I'm glad you did that, Liz.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have remembered.
I'm just going to fire through everything, and away we go.
You forgot 10 things.
So the things that we really want to talk about here today is ASP.NET V5. And one of the first topics, which, I mean, this is probably one of my favorite statements, we've moved your cheese, but it still tastes great.
It tastes better.
It tastes better. All right.
It tastes better.
So tell us a little bit around what, you know, ASP.NET 5 is all about, why we went and changed things up a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the new project formats and templates. And
so ASP.NET 5 is a lot of things. It is a reimagining. I hate that word so much, but I'm going to use it because it's applicable in this case. We went back and we said, you know, it's been a long time since we initially started working on ASP.NET. It was the late 90s, so what are we talking about, 15 years? And web development has changed a lot in that time, right? And so it was time for us to take a step back, and if we're going to look at changing some of the fundamental assumptions about our web development stack on top of .NET, you know, we're not changing that assumption, like it's still going to be .NET, obviously. What are some of the things that we would look at changing? And a lot of the announcements you saw yesterday was a result of that, right? So I have a slide here that if we can get up on the screen now, because I want to sort of talk through some of these things as we go through. So the first assumption is, you know, the operating system. When most people think about the Microsoft web development stack, they think about today that the operating system is Windows. Now, obviously, one of the huge announcements yesterday was that that is not the assumption anymore. The assumption is that the web development world is heterogeneous, it's cross-platform, and that includes when you want to run ASP.NET. So while we've had ASP.NET through, you know, 1 through 4 be primarily targeting Windows, and certainly from our point of view it was targeting Windows from the stuff that we shipped on our team, now we're focusing on this cross-plat story, so Windows, OS X, and Linux. And that base fundamental thing changes kind of a lot of things up the stack, which we're going to see. So if we move up the stack now to the runtime loader, this is the part of the .NET stack that actually figures out what are we going to run? Like what CLR, where are we going to get it from? How do we boot it up? What parameters is it configured with? I mean, this may be things that some developers take for granted, but this stuff has to happen regardless. Now today, in ASP.NET, there are kind of two ways that this happens. If you're in IIS, which is what you generally will be with ASP.NET, we have this thing called Web Engine 4. This is the part, native code that ships in IIS that knows how to boot your ASP.NET application by hosting the .NET framework and .NET CLR. Then if you were compiling a .NET console app, there was sort of this handshake that goes on between your .exe and the operating system. So when you kind of double click your .exe, there's some metadata in there that the OS says, oh, this is a managed executable. Let me go away for just a second and boot up the CLR for you, the same job that Web Engine 4 does in a web app, and then host your .exe on top of it, and then your app runs as normal. Well, we have this new runtime loader called the KRE. Because we can't rely on the operating system anymore, because we're cross-plat, right? There is no CLR loader in OS X, we had to build our own. This thing's called the KRE, and you're going to see the KRE come up a couple of times in this stack. It stands for the K Runtime Environment, and so people know K was the code name of ASP.NET 5, essentially. So K kind of appears in a few places. So once we have a runtime loader, we can actually run the runtime or load the runtime. Today, that's the .NET CLR that everyone knows. You know, ships in Windows, part of the .NET framework. We know all the good things that we know about the .NET CLR. In the new world, we have the .NET CLR too. Right? So you can continue to use the .NET CLR as it is, but we have this new thing that we announced yesterday called the .NET Core CLR. Yeah. And you know, we've heard some of the advantages of that. The .NET Core CLR, we're going to support on Mac and Linux, which we've already talked about. And when we say support, you know, we're going to build it and ship it and support it for customers who are either developing on Mac or running in production on Linux. But it also enables other things like, it's smaller, so it's easier to deploy. And because it's isolated and not part of the operating system, .NET CLR is still part of Windows. Mm-hmm. .NET Core CLR isn't. It means that we can deploy simultaneous versions side by side. It's portable. We call it like the portable CLR.
Yeah.
That's great. So now you can deploy a fix to your application at the core CLR level, and it won't affect anyone else on your server, which is really kind of good. So then after we've got runtime, we've got the platform libraries. These are the things that your application sort of depends on for core functionality. Today is the .NET base class library and framework class library, or BCL and FCL. That's the same again. So if you're targeting the .NET CLR with ASP.NET 5, you'll still have access to the .NET BCL and FCL. If you're on .NET Core, you have a trimmed down version of that, and rather than it being installed on the machine just like the .NET CLR is, it's pulled into your app by NuGet. They're just NuGet packages, which means that, again, you can modify those, you can version them independently from other pieces in your application, and again, it's just more portable. Okay? So NuGet is now the unit of deployment.
And with it being open source, you can actually build your own copy of those libraries and then put them into your app, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
that's build a good point. Own file system, build your own,
if that's
whatever you
want
to do. If you want to do this.
Yeah.
Build your own string, I mean.
Build your own string, yeah. Don't do that. So then we have the application host. Now the application host is, okay, my app has to run on something. There's got to be some intrinsics about how my application runs, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be some core things that I take dependencies on that aren't platform libraries. And in the case of ASP.NET today, that's system web. Like system web was ASP.NET, okay? In the new world, we have the KRE. So the KRE is the thing that hosts your application. It's the thing that defines the life cycle of your app, when it gets booted up, when it gets compiled, all these sort of things are determined by the host. So the KRE comes up again. We've got it two times now. Now we have to choose our web server. Now on Windows, that was IIS. That was what we shipped, that's what we supported, that's what ASP.NET was designed to run on, and Web Engine 4 shipped in IIS. IIS is still available, obviously, and we're still going to support that as our first class premier web development server when you're running on Windows. We also have self-host on HTTP.sys. So IIS uses HTTP.sys, but if you don't want to run in IIS for whatever reason, you want to run your own custom Windows service or just a standard command line .exe, you can use HTTP.sys, and we call that self-hosting. Then we have this other thing called Kestrel, because those first two are still Windows-based. And if we're going to be cross-plat, we need a different server that isn't Windows-based. So we have this new one called Kestrel, which is a fully managed web server. So it's written in .NET code. But it sits on top of something called libuv, or libuv, depending on how you pronounce it, which is a cross-platform evented I.O. library written in C, I think?
Yep.
And it's the same one that Node sits on top of. So people might have heard of libuv in the context of Node. This is the exact same libuv. We sit Kestrel on top of libuv, and it takes care of all the networking, the dispatching, and the management of threads, and the events, and all that sort of stuff from the OS in an abstracted fashion, and then your app sits on top of that. So now we've got this, it's in its infancy, but this is kind of where people can get started today, and obviously we're going to keep working on it. Then we have application framework. So, I have a web app, I have a web server, I've got a runtime. Now I need to build a thing so I can handle a request. What is that thing based on? Well, today we have, you know, the framework class library includes things like web forms. We have MVC, which is either in the GAC or brought in by NuGet, or maybe you use something like Nancy or some other web framework. But you know, today you get them from these three places. In the new world, you just get them from NuGet, right? None of our core frameworks like this are shipped and installed on the box anymore as part of any type of base library or in the GAC. You just bring them into your app via NuGet. They're all opt-in. One of the big things we're trying to push here in ASP.NET 5 is if you create an empty app, it is truly empty. Like, you get nothing. You get the ability to run a delegate when an HTTP request comes in, and that's it. Mm-hmm. You want to do something else, and you can even remove that if you want to.
Yeah.
Which seems a little counterintuitive and counterproductive, but you could. Now everything is brought in by NuGet. The application gets to choose. Okay, so on top of that now, we have libraries. You know, this is really where the power of an open source community comes to play. An extensive ecosystem of libraries that you can use. And even before we were open source, .NET was kind of well known for having so many libraries available from third-party vendors and from other people in the community, which is great. So today, you get those, you know, it's loose DLLs, yep. You get them from the GAC, and you get them from NuGet. Again, in the new world, it's simplified. It's just NuGet. Everything is NuGet. You bring it into your application via NuGet because you said you wanted it, not because we decided it was good for you. And then finally, you actually have your application. Today, to compile your application, we have this split model in ASP.NET. So half of your application gets built in Visual Studio or on your build server using MS Build, which calls out to this C# compiler, the old one. And then we have this thing called CodeDOM, which is what ASP.NET uses at runtime to compile things like your pages and your views, you know, mm-hmm. Razor or ASPX views. So we have this mismatch. Like, some things work at design time in VS or on the build server, and some things work at runtime, and that introduces, how should I put it?
Incompatibilities.
Yeah. Or it's kind of an impedance mismatch. Like, generally it's fine, but there are certain things you just can't do because they're happening at different times. That one can't depend on the other. Like, one could go one way, but not the other way, for example. In ASP.NET 5, again, the KRE is coming into play. The KRE is the thing that compiles your app. And it doesn't matter if you're compiling your app in Visual Studio, from the command line, or on the server from source, it's always the KRE powered by Roslyn, you know, the new managed C# compiler. Now, because we're using Roslyn, we also get some affordances, like we can make the compilation stage pluggable. Like, we can actually get you involved in the compilation step and make it extensible. Again, whether it's in VS, whether it's because you're building a NuGet package, or whether you deploy your source to the server and then let the KRE compile it when the app is first run. Cool. And then finally, nearly all the stuff on the right is open source, which is the other big announcement,
that's
right?
Brilliant.
So everything here, except for where I've mentioned the .NET CLR and the .NET BCL and FCL, and obviously IIS, you know, that's not open source. Everything else in here is open source, which is great, okay? So that's a really, really big thing.
Brilliant. Awesome. Well, thank you for giving that overview. I noticed we have a few questions coming in from the audience,
sure.
So let's handle some of those. So we have Cat with Three Hats is asking, what is the best way / tutorial or starting point to get started building ASP.NET applications on a Mac or Linux? And there's two people that can answer.
Let me take that one up. So you want to go to omnisharp.net, and then that's going to be our landing page to get started with Sublime, Atom, Brackets, Vim, Emacs. You pick your editor. Omnisharp.net is where you want to be.
That's brilliant. Cool. And that basically covers out any editor that you'd want to use across all those different platforms.
Yeah, that's right. And then just to let everybody know, if you're interested in onboarding a new editor for Omnisharp, so let's say if you want to bring IDE, J, or whatever, there's all sorts of editors, TextMate, ping me, or go to omnisharp.net, and then on any of the repositories there, just say, hey, I want to create a new editor. Yep. And then I'll hook you up with the meetings that we're having and get the discussions kind of started.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. That's great.
That's for tooling, right? For the runtime itself, go to github.asp.net/home, and that has, you know, to get started with a bunch of apps that are test apps. Mm-hmm. And it also has the way to boot the KRE on the Mac itself to download it via curl command, and then you're off going.
Right.
Cool. Yep. So do we have any images for people to get going or things along those lines? Or basically everything's documented between that and the ASP?
Do we have a homebrew for Mac?
We do.
Right.
We do have a
homebrew. So if you're into homebrew, you can use that as well, right?
You can brew and install KVM and you're good to go.
Nice.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about that too, saying, you know, I know on the Windows side and for Visual Studio, we do have images and Azure and stuff like that. And I thought, hey, should we create some images for the Mac stuff? But to be quite honest with you, getting started with those things is way simpler and way easier that you don't necessarily need an image. All you do is you go to the command line, you do a few things, you add some stuff in Install Package Manager, so it's much more lightweight process. I think It doesn't make sense to have a VM in those cases.
Yeah. Well, that is, having a Mac VM is a little hard.
Right.
Yes. Compared to the Windows world, so yeah.
So we have another question coming in from the boring coder, and you're not boring. This is actually a really interesting question. Is Microsoft reaching out to Apple and Linux makers to bundle the KRE with OS X and flavors of Linux, much like they do today with things like Python, Ruby, lots of different compilers actually come on board, you know, by default.
That's a great question.
Not on a Mac. Maybe on Linux.
Yeah, I mean,
but yeah, we're not.
This came up a couple of times, and I hear mixed opinions about whether people even think this is a good idea for the stuff that is bundled on OS X or Linux. That's an interesting idea. We should talk about it. Think about it a bit more.
Well, yeah. Let us know what your thoughts are in the comments below.
Yeah,
good call. One of the things though is like with the pluggability that we have. I mean, does it make sense? If we're going to be moving at a rapid pace,
that's the question.
Ship it?
Yeah,
it's like Node.js, right? They have like 20 versions in like a week, right? So, like, do you want to have that bundled in the OS, or do you want the latest stable version in the OS?
And as we just got finished saying, I mean, if it's so easy to get up and going as just homebrew install one thing and then you're off to the races with your favorite editor.
Yeah.
Do we really need to go to the trouble of bundling a fixed version with a specific version of OS X or Linux? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure.
That's a good question. Let's leave it up to the people out there to give us some comments and figure this out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll do one more question from the audience, and then we'll jump into a demo. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Awesome. So does ASP.NET 5 interact with the GAC in any way, or is the idea kind of a shared location of assemblies completely gone now? Like, we talked about how NuGet's there.
Yep.
How we're available to just plug in even the runtime itself, like .NET itself. So do we really see a need for interacting with the GAC?
So I would just say those things are those things aren't mutually exclusive. Like a NuGet package is, by definition, a shared unit of deployment.
Very true.
Right? And so one of the things in ASP.NET 5 is that all NuGet packages are installed by default to a single location on disk in your development environment. Again, by definition, they're shared. Now, the question of the GAC wasn't just about a shared location to put assemblies. Like, it had a whole lot of other stuff going on.
It had
policy and version control and identity management and all types of stuff.
Redirection.
And it turns out over time that some of those things can be solved in different ways that aren't perhaps as intrusive as the GAC can be. Mm-hmm. The GAC is very good for certain things, and we will have solutions for some of the things that the GAC solved in today's world.
Yep.
And again, if you're targeting ASP.NET 5, on the .NET framework, the GAC is still there, and the GAC still works, and it still works the exact same way it
still
does
used,
today,
yeah.
And it's still used. On .NET Core, we don't have a GAC.
There's no GAC
on .NET Core, but there will be ways to do things like machine-wide servicing, which you would traditionally have used the GAC for.
Cool. So. Excellent. So we're just plugging in the other laptop here. We're going to take a look at the brand new file structure straight out of Visual Studio.
Sweet.
Excellent.
I think I'll start from scratch then, I guess. File new project again?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sure. All right, so file new project. I'm in the web tab, and I'll go into an ASP.NET web application. If you notice that there's a class library and a console app, these are blue, which means it's new. Green means new sometimes, depending on how deep you go. So file new project, I can either choose empty, which is really, really empty, or I can use start a web. So these templates are the existing framework on full .NET 4.5. So empty, web forms, MVC are all in the same dialog as ASP.NET 5 stuff. So if you want a new MVC app, you go to the start a web template, and you hit OK. That should create a brand new template, and we can look at what gets created.
And I will say, that dialog we're still designing.
Yes, it's a work in progress.
That's kind of the first iteration of adding ASP.NET 5 to the one ASP.NET dialog. And we have some ideas to make that even clearer so that you know up front whether you're choosing sort of ASP.NET 4X or ASP.NET 5 and, you know, the options associated with it.
Yeah,
cool.
And we're still working on the perf of that dialogue.
Working on perf all up across the board.
Yep.
There's a new welcome page. It makes you feel comfortable with ASP.NET 5. It tells you we're a lean, composable framework, we're open source. It's a whole bunch of open source in the project by default.
Prose always makes me feel comfortable.
It does, right?
I have to say, yes.
We spent time on this page.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the, I guess, general structure. To tell if you're new or not, you can look at the new icon. It's blue. I can zoom in on that. It's a beautiful new icon. There's a thing called global JSON, the solution items. We do create some default structure for you. So before, you'd have projects in the root of your application. We now put them under SRC. That's because we've seen over the past few years .NET projects that have this convention, and we figured we should base some convention into the actual file new project experience.
And we'd love to hear feedback on that. We've used this structure for all of the source code of ASP.NET 5 itself. So if you go to GitHub and look at the code, you'll see that we use the structure. And it's worked well for us, but you know, we want to hear feedback.
Give us feedback, yeah.
So if I automatically went and, you know, I want to test my application, so I say, yeah, give me tests. Would we see the SRC and test folder show up?
When we add support for the unit test checkbox for ASP.NET 5, then we'll have that. Yep. So right now, it's disabled, but we'll have that.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. That's the idea, yeah.
So if you're familiar with Katana, Katana was the, you know, the first step to vNext. It was kind of a way to decouple our hosts from our friends from our hosts. So Signaler, for example, used Katana to decouple from System Web, so you can self-host Signaler on same as Web API. Mm-hmm. This class is similar to that class, and there's a bunch of things in here. So there's startup.cs, and this is your entry point for web applications.
So if people, another way to think about the startup.cs class is probably, it's a logical merging of perhaps web.config and the old global.asax.cs class.
Yep.
So you would have this code that could run at certain points during application startup, that was global.asax.
Yep.
And then you had web.config where you would declare configuration for your application using the configuration model. In ASP.NET 5, configuration is all code-based by default.
Yep.
Everything is code-based by default. And so you have this startup.cs, which is kind of where your app boots. And the app boots based on the code that you write.
Yep. So everything, including the config system, is all app code. The config comes in via a NuGet package. You have to create it yourself. You new it up. And you add the configuration file yourself. So this is really the pay-as-you-go part. So you add JSON file, config.json, and you add environment variables. The ordering here is significant because it means that JSON files get read first. Mm-hmm. And if you deploy to Antares or Azure website, then you can override variables in your config file with environment variables, which is how we've seen apps do this in general.
And this is one of the examples of, you know, when we talk about cloud optimized, looking at how configuration works. You know, to date, the way we tried to solve this with the old config system was that we would have these transform systems where you would have like your root config file, and then during special deployment to a certain environment, you would transform that with like a delta file, but that required you to go through our deployment pipeline for that to work. In this system, we have, well, okay, how about we don't try and put config values for a specific environment in the app at all? Why don't they just stay in the environment in the form of environment variables? That's how we've been doing it on all operating systems for forever, right? Yep. And so what David's saying here is you can have your root config in a file in your app like you normally would, and your environment-specific stuff will come from environment variables. Yep. And that might include things that are secret, like a connection string. So then you never have to worry about accidentally checking in a connection string to source control, for example.
We've all done that.
Go to GitHub and search for machine key and connection strings. You'll see a whole bunch.
Yeah.
So you actually brought up an interesting term, and I hate to interrupt the demo, but I think it might actually bring a little bit more context to some of the stuff that we're about to show off. What does it really mean to be cloud optimized?
I think of it more as a frame of mind. Like, it's really more about, as we're building this system, as we build ASP.NET 5, we're thinking about how does this work when I deploy using the modern sort of cloud-based dev workflow, right? Which includes things such as using the Visual Studio tools to publish to Azure websites, or using something like Kudu, which is the Azure website's source control deployment mechanism, so that when I check something into a Git repository or copy it to Dropbox, which we support, and then this website is deployed because it then gets pulled from that source repository and then built on the server, how does that work? Like, you know, 5 years ago, no one did that.
Yeah.
You know, that's only sort of evolved in the last couple of years. It also means things like scale and concurrency. How do we deal with making building web applications that can scale nicely in environments like Azure and Azure websites easier, right? How about having parts of the application that you would naturally want to change once you've deployed to a cloud provider, like caching session management, crypto, database strings, those stuff. If those things are typically the things you would have to manage manually in your app when you push them to the cloud provider, why can't we have a mechanism where just by default, if I'm using in-memory caching on my dev machine, but once I push to Azure, it knows that I have Redis caching set up in my account, that magically it just starts using Redis? Because semantically, the interface is the same. Yep. Why can't that stuff just happen for me? So those are the type of things that we mean when we talk about cloud optimized. And it also includes things like, you know, let's make it as memory efficient as possible, pay as you go fast, don't pay for stuff you don't use, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I've heard someone say that in the past, we made ASP.NET on our team, we thought about it's going to up to publishing, and then we stop. And now we're going further. So we think past publishing and past like maintenance, like how do you do logging? How do you do diagnostics? How do you do error checking for an app running 24/7 in Azure?
That's right.
It's like full life cycle.
And I think, you know, being involved in the cloud basically forces us to look at these end-to-end scenarios and, you know, actually just do a better job for everybody that's out there, you know? Totally.
Yeah.
Awesome. So kind of opting into all these little features, I think, is that driven now off of the package or the project JSON file?
It is. The JSON file is a more concise version of your dependency management. So before we had the entire, we had packages config, and there's your entire list of packages there for all your dependencies. Right now, we're essentially turning an assembly reference into a package reference, where the package is a unit of reference. So in the Solution Explorer, you actually see a reflection of the JSON file expanded. So for example, anyframework.sql server is in here. And you can expand the graph and see dependencies of dependencies. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a nice way to see your package graph and your dependency closure.
Nice.
And reads about your actual dependencies.
Like NuGet is first class.
It's first
that's really the thing to think about here is that NuGet previously was a tack on. Like we added it after .NET had been using just assemblies for years and years. Now NuGet is baked in. Like these things here are NuGet packages. That's what you're asking for. You're not asking for assemblies anymore.
Yep.
One thing I want to point out while he's got this opened up, if you're in the samples and you're trying to find what NuGet package is this particular thing from, you can search in the
Solution Explorer here. So I can ask myself where is logging or something, and you can see it shows you who depends on logging and where it is in the actual references node.
Yeah. Mm. So if you've got a sample open up and you don't know where did that type come from. Just search here and then go and add that NuGet package to your own project as well.
So one thing we did as well is made IntelliSense really good in JSON files. So you can actually click here and search for NuGet packages real time.
That's really nice.
Right.
And if you go and add one of those, I've noticed that there's actually, you can right click on the editor surface. I think it was a right click. Mm-hmm. And you can install the package directly from the JSON file.
That was in Bower
and NPM. Okay. In here, we actually do that automatically in the background.
So when you add one of these things and you hit save.
If you look at the Solution Explorer on the right.
It says restoring.
It says restoring now.
Right here.
Yeah. Awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's jump to another question for a second here.
Yep.
The boring coder, once again, with an interesting question. I have a feeling they really want to do development on their phone. So the question is, since the KRE supports OS X and Linux, would it be possible to see a cut-down version of KRE that's supported on iOS and Android?
Android, possibly. iOS, I can't imagine how we would ever have that work, just given the fact that iOS prohibits certain types of runtimes and those type of things. But technically, I guess it would be possible on Android.
It's interesting asking the web team about the
Also, they're different platforms. Maybe. They're different architectures is what I mean. Like, they're ARM. They're not x86.
Yeah.
And so that's not just a case of, oh, it's a different OS. Let's now we support Linux, we can put an Android. It's a whole different architecture.
Maybe .NET Native would like be a better fit, but we're not sure.
Yeah. So I mean, I would just say Xamarin, you can do this stuff today. You can use .NET to use iOS and Android, and they kind of do all the hard work to make that stuff work.
Cool. Awesome. We have another question here. Can I convert ASP.NET 4 or 3 projects to ASP.NET 5?
Not in the way that you might be thinking. There's no like conversion process as such, because this is, I would think of this as, I'm trying to think of a good analogy.
ASP Classic to .NET.
Yeah, in some ways it's like ASP Classic to ASP.NET. Although,
there's a lot more shared.
It is quite similar. Like in ASP Classic to ASP.NET, we kept a lot of the same APIs. Like the 5 intrinsic server objects were maintained. So in a lot of cases, you could take an ASP file, rename it to ASPX, and it would just work. That will be the case for some code that you have in your ASP.NET 4 application today. If you're using MVC, especially one of the later versions of MVC, or SignalR, or Web API, you'll be able to take your controllers, and depending on what APIs you're calling those controllers, you could drop them into an ASP.NET 5 application, and they'll compile just fine. But whether there will be like a first class, let me open an ASP.NET 4 application as an ASP.NET 5 application and go through a traditional Visual Studio upgrade conversion path, we've never done that for MVC, like ever. That's never been a supported thing. You've always had to manually kind of upgrade from one version to another. And this will be somewhat the same. But what we've tried to do is ensure that the main concepts are compatible. So
we might create a tool that's like unsupported to kind of get you started with that, but it's very difficult to migrate something, you know, with an automated tool and then have everything just work out of the box.
Yeah, it definitely won't just work.
It definitely won't just work.
You have to change some code.
So, I mean, if you want to try something, what I would try is that if you're using an MVC application today and you wanted to, you know, figure out what the impact would be, create a project.json file in the root of that project.
That's a good one.
You know, copy it from a file new ASP.NET 5 starter web, put the project.json file in there, and then open it in Visual Studio just by opening the project.json file. It'll create a kproj file for you next to your csproj file. So now you have a single folder that is both an MVC 5 application and an ASP.NET 5 application. Okay, and then see, I mean, obviously the old one compiles, see what happens with the new one. There will be breaks.
That works well.
But that would be an interesting way for you to figure out the delta.
Also, ASP.NET Core 5.0 makes it hard because your dependencies have to be recompiled against that target framework. Yeah. So it's kind of a way to, you kind of have to get your dependencies all set before you can move your app itself.
Okay. Yep. So we've gone through part of a demo now. Yep. We've talked about the startup CS file where configuration is now code based by default, which is really interesting. We talked about the new project JSON file, which is a way that we've kind of repositioned where things actually go. So no longer do we have packages JSON. What other things are in this project JSON? Because we've kind of gotten rid of like the CS proj file, and it's all kind of in here now, right?
Right.
Why don't you talk about the multiple frameworks, and then that could be a transition to combined IntelliSense.
Yep,
absolutely.
So if you notice here, I can support more than one framework in my JSON file. So in the past, so I guess because we have two target frameworks for ASP.NET 5, full CLR and core CLR, we wanted a way so you can write your apps to potentially move to both at the same time. But if you just weren't available on the new core CLR yet, you can still have an app work, you know, on both. So what we did is we made this new project system that kind of builds on the shared universal projects kind of behind the scenes. And we create essentially a bunch of projects for each target framework in here. So if I want to create a package or an app that targeted ASP.NET 5.0, ASP.NET Core 5.0, and like on full desktop, like regular .NET 4.5, I could add a new one here, save it, and now I have, it's going to restore. It's going to restore super quickly.
There we go.
And it's there, right?
Cool.
And what that gave me is, you know, I can go to my properties page and say, whenever I build, I want to create a NuGet package. Mm-hmm. I'll save that. And then when I do a build, it will print some stuff. And if I go to the brand new artifacts folder, we used to put things under,
it will explode.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to pretend that this works because this, it won't compile there. That's the bug, we're prepared.
That's actually really great because it actually shows that we're building for all
for
the frameworks,
all target frameworks
on every build. So if you introduce one and you're not, you know, active on that one like in the past, you know, you'll discover it right away, basically.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
So this is the, you know, a lot of people do cross compilation today, especially if you're a library author.
Yes.
Because you want to cross compile an assembly that has the you expose the same functionality, but you might implement it slightly differently depending when you're on a phone versus on a Windows Store app versus on .NET 4.5. And this is a first class sort of approach to doing that. Like this project system actually compiles twice because he has two frameworks listed there. And you could create a ASP.NET 5 class library, which is a terrible name. We're going to come up with a better one. But an ASP.NET 5 class library right now, and you can list like seven frameworks in there. You can put WinPhone, and you can put, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff, and that will produce an upkeg, which has all those assemblies
frameworks
in it.
So if you look here in artifacts bin, application name debug, I actually have a NuGet package and each target framework with assemblies compiled into it.
That's really cool.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
And then for combined IntelliSense, if you notice that if I type in an API, like app domain maybe, all right, there's a new icon here that shows me it's not available in one of the target frameworks that I'm currently using.
Cool.
So it says available in .NET 4.5, but not available. Well, I guess
the app context is the opposite.
Yeah, it's the opposite, yeah.
Yeah.
App domain is available in full desktop, but not available on core CLR.
Okay.
So when you're moving your code from old to new world, you can kind of look here and go, oh, let me, you know, work around this issue for now and figure out how to replace this API with something else in the future.
Yeah, right. that's some valuable advice. Yeah. Let's head back to a couple questions here.
Yep.
So we have, if config in ASP.NET 5 is environment variables by default. Now, this says environment variables by default, but that was because we ordered it
correct.
That way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm paying attention.
Yes.
How do you recommend managing those variables? So if I want to control those for, you know, deployment to a production environment, how do I actually go and migrate those settings to different servers and such?
So that's an interesting question. So, I mean, first of all, by default is kind of a misnomer because that's just because that's what he had in the code. Again, you pay as you go, you get what you write. Like, that's not by default. That's only because the code was written to do that.
Yep.
Secondly, but we are recommending that's the way most people do it.
Yep.
Secondly, we kind of expect that those type of values that you would put in the environment themselves live with the life of the environment. They're not things that you would change typically with each deployment, but the connection string to your database doesn't change every time you deploy a new version, right? Or the password to some crypto storage on the server or anything like that doesn't typically change. Think about it the same way if you've used Azure websites and you go into the portal where you can manage environment variables in the portal, you don't change those whenever you do a new Git deploy, right? They kind of live. So generally, you would manage those as part of your initial environment setup. So if you automate environment setup, then that script, which would live separately from your application completely, that would be the one that manages those variables.
Yeah, so we're basically stepping back and just to kind of summarize that, there's your actual web development, and then there's the whole DevOps procedure.
The DevOps,
right?
Exactly.
And that's the conversation that Soma had. Let's go and let's make great, like Visual Studio has a great way to do mobile development.
Right.
Cloud development, which is the stuff we're talking about when we're building out web applications and managing that lifecycle on the application end. But then you have your infrastructure side, which is the whole DevOps story. And that's how you go and manage all these environments.
Correct. And
stuff
and like so that. Maybe in the future, when we get Docker on Windows and we have Docker now on Linux, you can manage those type of things in the configuration of your Docker container, for example.
Right? It was really exciting the other day. There was the first check-in for Docker on Windows.
Nice.
And I was like, this is going to be
this is going to be
good. It's going to be good.
All right. So we have another question here from Joel. Can you address how Owen relates to the new ASP.NET 5 stack? ASP.NET Identity and SignalR were previously built on top of it. Where do they kind of sit now?
So a couple of corrections to the question. Owen relates in that we were, well, that's an answer, I guess. Owen relates in that we were very heavily inspired by Owen and that we will be Owen compatible. So you will be able to take ASP.NET 5 applications, including all of their dependencies, and you will be able to sit them on an Owen-compliant server, like a quote-unquote pure
Owen
server, by way of an adapter. And vice versa, you'll be able to take a pure Owen middleware, rather than just purely delegate-based, and plug that into our middleware pipeline, again, by way of an adapter. Now, ASP.NET Identity and SignalR technically weren't really built on top of Owen. They were built on top of Katana, and Katana had an adapter that allowed it to run on Owen. Like, it wasn't technically a pure Owen server. If you spoke to someone who was like really into Owen, they would say, well, you know, Katana wasn't really Owen, and SignalR wasn't really Owen, which is true. I would say they weren't. But they run on top of Owen. And really, for me personally, the benefit of Owen was around creating that pluggability and that abstraction so that you can build these more opinionated stacks and have them still sit on top of the same server or different servers. And so that will still work.
Cool. So we're we have around 5 minutes or so left. Did you want to start getting the Mac
Do we want to flip this on its head?
And
like, oh, my goodness. Look at that. Okay.
Awesome. Look at that.
This is a hello world, but it's not really hello world. It's kind of
a
crazy.
Bit more than hello world.
A bit more. Seb, do you want to show the OmniSharp Sublime stuff?
Is it running? Sure, yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
Sublime 3.
Yeah,
we
come on over there.
Let's do a defrag.
Okay. We're gonna move here.
Everyone. There we go.
All right, cool. So here I am. All right, I am. I've never been on this machine before, so let me just play around with something. So I'll say bar. Foo dot replace. Oh man, it's not working here actually.
Do you have to activate or turn it on?
No. Let's do control. What kind of is this, a K project?
Yeah.
Do you have the Yeoman generators? Can we just do a Yeoman file?
Yes.
Okay, let's try that out then. Okay.
Use the other one.
Oh, sorry. Which one?
That one.
This one here.
Much better.
All right. Let me create a new folder here. All right. So I'll go into that.
Well, you're going and doing that. Let's field a couple more questions.
Yeah. Let's
sure.
Couple more questions.
Awesome. So Joe says, Coffee's starting to kick out here. you demoed the ability to target multiple frameworks. What happens when you need a section of code for one framework and another section for another framework? Are there compiler directives?
The holy if!
Yes.
It's all about if definitely.
We create you a directive by default that matches your target framework name, all uppercase. So you do if ASP.NET 50. If you put, you know, net 4.5 in there, it's if net 4.5, if net 4.0, for example. So yeah, you get, by default, you get that benefit.
So essentially, you know, if you were to target multiple things today, it works
the same
way.
It's the same pattern.
It's just that we integrate this now into one project system.
Yeah.
Cool. John asked, how does cloud business apps, HTML5 and so forth, integrate with ASP.NET 5?
I have no idea. I'm not really sure what the intersection they're looking for there is. I don't really have anything intelligent to say about that other than if your cloud business app calls web services, you'll be able to call them if they're hosted in ASP.NET 5. Like, you know, this is just another web stack like anything else. If they're talking more about how do I take an ASP.NET 5 web app and then repackage that as an HTML5 based like cloud business app, like something you might deploy with Cordova or something like that, technically possible. That's not a first-class thing in our project system right now, but you could certainly share assets like you would today between any web application and any web technology-based application, you know, for example, like an HTML store app.
Cool. So we just had a question about my tie.
Oh, interesting.
What kind of tie is this? This is an 8-bit tie.
Yeah.
I've had multiple people comment on it that it's the Minecraft tie.
Yeah.
But it's definitely an 8-bit tie. I don't know. I think... it's rather unique.
Are you planning on upgrading to a 16-bit version anytime soon?
I'm really not too sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think you know, you can find it online. Definitely go out and take a look. They're all around, so you should be able to find one.
Cool.
Happy Coder asks, is test-driven development implemented in ASP.NET? Triple question mark. So that's really important to understand. Is there also a JS lint implemented to provide tips for best practices in coding?
So on the first question, is TDD implemented in ASP.NET? I'm not entirely sure what that means.
I think what it means is, are you building ASP.NET test-driven?
No, we're not. I mean, I'll just say it flat out. We're not. We write tests. I mean,
we write tons of tests.
There are lots of developers in ASP.NET.
Either last or first. I don't know.
And some people will choose to write their tests first while they're doing some. Some people will choose to write them afterwards. I certainly send PRs without tests because I'm a bad person. But I wouldn't get up and claim that ASP.NET is based on test-driven development. No. It isn't, but if you want to do that, you can
do it.
And it'll work really, really well. And in fact, with the KRE running in the background in Visual Studio all the time, we have working examples of where you can have things like continuous testing going on while you're coding. So you know, rock on with that stuff. Is there also JS Lint implemented? I guess they mean a JS Lint equivalent for ASP.NET 5, because you know there's no JavaScript in here that we're talking about.
I think it might be JS Lint support within Visual Studio.
Okay, so. Yes and no. So Web Essentials has had JS Lint capabilities for a while. What we're looking at now is with the new Task Runner Explorer and the Grunt and Gulp support, you can plug in JS Lint as a Grunt task, for example, that runs as part of your watch lifecycle. And then because that's fired off by the Task Runner Explorer, we can look at the output of that JS Lint or JS Hint and then tunnel those errors back into the editor for you.
Cool. So we have one last question. Do you know what the preferred channel of collaboration with ASP.NET is now? So this is, you've now open sourced ASP.NET, and there's lots of community people out there that would love to help out.
Yeah.
How do you want to communicate with the community?
Any way they want to.
GitHub, Jabber, the forums.
Carrier Pigeon.
No emails, though.
Okay. Smoke signals.
Smoke signals.
Smoke signals.
GitHub is good. GitHub.com/ASP.NET/home is a
home
good place for general discussion.
Okay.
If you have actual issues, go to the appropriate repository and log the issue there. If you just want to chat with people about what you're doing, Jabber is a great place. Like most of the team hangs out in Jabber in the ASP.NET VNext room, which we should probably rename to ASP.NET 5 now.
Yeah.
And then you know the forums, ASP.NET forums, which have been around for you know decades, are still there, and you can obviously log questions in there as well. And
Stack Overflow,
you know.
Yeah.
So a great way for people that are in the community. Send a pull request early, because then the community out there can actually go and give you feedback on what you're working on. So you send a work in progress pull request. Hey, this is the idea I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of people pile on your idea, give you feedback, mm-hmm. and then you can get that.
That's a really good point. Don't think a pull request means I want to put the code in your repository. Sometimes it's a request for comment.
Yeah.
And if you mark it as this is a work in progress, I want feedback, we won't look at it as, oh, well, you haven't signed the contribution agreement and all that stuff. Yeah. So, no, we will just give you, you know, let people party on your code, because that's what GitHub is great at.
Yeah. Awesome. So I think we're winding down here.
Yep. Is something working?
While they've been talking, I've been kind of showing some stuff back here in the background.
Okay, so it works.
They've been able to see it.
So it is time.
Okay.
So everyone's going to have to appreciate the awesomeness. Sorry that we didn't get to your demo.
But it does work.
But thank you, all of you out there. And thank you guys, actually, for joining me today here. I really appreciate it. Thank you all out there. Thank you so much for your Twitter questions or your questions. And hopefully enjoy the rest of the event today.
Perfect. Thank you.